Your Partner in Success Radio is a free business podcast with host Denise Griffiths. It's all about great stories, conversation, and context to help you move your business and life forward with actionable tips and advice from her guest experts. To listen and subscribe, just find us on iTunes, Google Play, or wherever you consume your podcasts.
Good morning and welcome to Your Partner in Success Radio, where top performers across the globe share their secrets to help you reach your personal and your professional goals. I am your host, Denise Griffiths, and with my incredible guests, we are here to provide inspiring and practical insights to elevate your life and your business. Ranked in the top 2% globally, this podcast really is a must listen, and it's because of my guests. So whether you're seeking entrepreneurial tips, career advice, or personal growth strategies, get set to turn inspiration into action, challenges into victories, and dreams into tangible achievements. And take notes, by the way, take a lot of notes. So today we are joined by Chase Dalton, who made the leap from athlete to entrepreneur, channeling the determination he honed in sports into his company's ethos of grow or die. I love that. Over the past 6 years, he has successfully steered Silicon Signs from a startup in 2018 to a thriving $4+ million in business and establishing a nationwide presence across all 50 states. That's impressive. So born and raised in Portland, Oregon. Yeah, I'm having a bit of trouble speaking today. My air conditioner is out and I'm miserable. So please just bear with me. So born and raised in Portland, Oregon, amidst a bustling household of 8 siblings, Chase transitioned from being an athlete to an entrepreneur. And his diverse experiences, including his elite, we'll talk about that, elite athletic background, surviving a plane crash, navigating religious deconstruction, and grappling with ADHD, all contributed to shaping his entrepreneurial journey. These challenges instilled in him resilience, adaptability, and a drive for success. And Chase, I can't talk no more. Welcome. I'm glad to have you here.
Hey, you sound great to me. You're a real human, Denise. It's not a pre-recorded thing. It's nice. It's authentic. I think everyone appreciates it.
Thank you. I live in the deep South and we have 2 seasons, hot and hotter in hell. And when the air conditioning goes off, that's a crisis. It really is. So I'm hot, I'm sweaty, I'm cranky, and I'm so glad to be talking to somebody who is sane. So I'm glad you're here.
Well, it snowed yesterday where I'm from. So that's different.
It is. And people say, I don't understand. Well, it's spring and it's, weather is going to be, in my case and probably yours, it could be hot, 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 hot. And then all of a sudden we've got rain and mud season and you've got snow. I don't know why people complain about the weather. It's going to do what it's going to do. Until the air conditioning goes off, then I'm going to complain. So here we go. But listen, tell people about you and the wonderful ways that you navigate through the world.
Yeah, well, you covered a lot of that. Thanks for the great intro. Like you mentioned, been running Silicon Signs since 2018, and I'm kind of on fire about it right now. There's a lot of really good things happening just in the market, and we've really identified who our customer is and how to market to them. We're bringing on some really cool talent. So I feel like we're kind of just scratched the surface. So I'm super excited just with that. And also just the things that I'm learning as an individual, as I navigate the growth and transition and the hard conversations I'm having. And it's just making me a better person, better business owner. I kind of realized that nobody really knows what the heck they're doing when they're running a business. Doesn't matter how big your business is. Like, we're all just trying to figure it out as we go. And so that's been something that's been really, really fun for me. I also have two little kids. I have a 4-year-old and an 18-month-old, and then we're expecting another in August.
Congratulations.
Thank you. Yeah, I think that'll be it for us. We're just gonna go with 2, but our 18-month-old is such an angel that she tricked us into having another.
I'll blame it on the baby. she's gonna hear this when she's older. Just so
Yeah.
you know.
And she's probably going to be a terror, but right now she's perfect. So we're like, okay, we could do this one more time. So no, it's been fun growing our little family, and gosh, this time of life is just so wild. You know, when me and my wife have to like actually schedule time to have a conversation about anything, that's when you know it's pretty chaotic. But I'm in love with this stage of life, but I'm also happy that it is a stage and that
Yeah.
it won't be like this forever.
And I think that's what a lot of people in business, myself included, don't quite grasp. Because we wake up in the morning, we hit the floor running, the devil says, "Oh crap, she's awake," and off we go. And we think it's going to be like this all the time. It's really not. But it's hard to settle it down and say, "Okay, I got this. I got it."
It's okay for things to be hard and difficult and to not be like to not, you know, be so infatuated and fake yourself, you know, trick yourself into thinking, oh, you know, I love this. I think it's okay to just say, yeah, this kind of sucks right now, but like I'm gonna enjoy it because it is temporary. There's never gonna be a time in my life I know that I'm more needed than I am right now by humans who literally depend on me for their life and sustenance and employees who need me to train and coach. And so while it's exhausting, I imagine I'm going to look back on this time in my life with fondness of just feeling so needed. You know, does that sound egotistical? But
No, I'm listening to you, and your voice went up about an octave. You're excited about it now. You don't have to wait. It shows in your voice.
yeah, so that's it's interesting. It's been cool to transition also into just different identities. For so long, the identity of athlete was just it was so prevalent in my life. I remember there was a time where I would get kind of disgusted with myself that I couldn't even get through a conversation with a new person without like feeling compelled to mention that I was an athlete. Because it gave me so much self-worth. And so it's really nice now to have just different identities, and also just come into my own. I mean, I just turned 35, and it feels like I'm just now realizing like, okay, who am I outside of being a father or a husband or a business owner, and you know, having my athletic career be, you know, fading into a distant memory at this point. To just realize that I am who I am outside of these other things that I do. So yeah, that's kind of the mindset that I've been, that's been, that I've been in, what's been framing my, you know, my existence recently. And it's just a very interesting time of life right now. I love it.
I'm glad you do. Like, I've worked with a lot of athletes, and it's something I think, because by watching and listening to elite athletes such as you, it becomes part of who you are. You have body memories, you have memories, you have all kinds of things that are going on, but it also helps you move forward unless you're stuck in high school. Bundy, anybody? But you know, unless you get stuck there. And you don't take all of those lessons learned, you might want to rethink how you're living your life.
Yeah, I'm not wearing my Letterman's jacket around every day, if that's what you're asking. Yeah.
Yeah, I wondered. No, not really. So tell us about, because you have so many different things that have gone on in your life, have happened, you know, and as you said yourself, honed you into who you are now and who you're becoming. Let's talk about your plane crash. What happened there?
Yeah, gosh, that was a I can look back to that moment. So this is in December of 2020. Everything in my life changed the day that happened. And when I say everything, I mean everything. My life was turned completely upside down, but in a good way. I have a friend who he was actually on the track team with me in college. We did the same event. We trained together. We both graduated, and during the COVID break, he wanted to go get a pilot's license. So he went and did that, got his license, and then he wanted to start a business where he was he'd rent out his plane. So he bought a plane too, and he always wanted to go up with me. And I'd never been up in a plane, and my wife was really opposed to it. being in a small plane with a new pilot. And so I said, hey, once you hit 100 hours, then let's go on a loop, you know. So he hit his 100 hours, and so we planned a trip. And he grew up about, you know, 4 hour drive from where we're at here. And so he's like, let's just go to my house for the day and just, you know, can see my family and get some lunch and just enjoy the scenery. It was a beautiful, clear day in December. We went up there. It was awesome. We stayed there for probably a little too long. I wanted to get home before dark, but we ended up leaving around the evening time. And it's a winter, so, you know, got dark pretty soon. We get up into the air, and I just leaned back, kind of fell asleep for a minute. And then I wake up to just a different vibration in the plane. And so I sat up, and I see the pilot kind of tapping his instruments, kind of seeing what's going on. His fuel gauge, I mean, not his fuel gauge, his oil pressure gauge had gone down to zero. And so he was tapping it, seeing if it was a pressure issue. And we're starting to talk about it. Say, is everything okay? He's like, yeah, this gauge isn't right. I think we need to stop. But we were in between two landing strips. And so he could either turn around, go to one, or continue on to another. He said, you know what, let's go to Heber City Airport. That's the closest one in this direction. Call Avery and Alyssa, our wives, said, let them know that we're going to stop and check out what's going on. So he started to climb just in case anything happened, he'd have more time. And as he started to climb, the prop stopped midair. So it's dark. We're in the Snowy Mountains. We're between, if you know where Park City is in Utah, we were, you know, outside of Park City. And then the engine just stops. And those single engine planes are super loud. I'm sitting there with noise canceling headphones, and the prop just stopped, and there's this big boom. And I'd never been in a small plane. I didn't know how these things work. But we were going a certain speed, and we started slowing way down. And I took my headphones off, and I just thought, well, this is it. I mean, we're slowing down so far, and then we're just going to go crash into the side of this mountain here. The pilot is kind of cranking the engine, trying to see what's going on, and, you know, figuring out what's, seeing if he can restart the engine. I tried six or seven times. And I, you know, I figured that was the end, you know, for me. And I remember having this conscious thought, do I panic and freak out, or do I just take it like a man, I guess, in a way? And I chose to just, like, you know, keep my head. And it's like, okay, I'm accepting this. I'm accepting death here. And then this overwhelming feeling of just grief overcame me. Because our son, our firstborn, he was about 6 months old at the time. And I just remember feeling so sad that I was not going to, you know, be with him anymore. And I just wanted to hold him. We had service up there. I pulled out my phone and I dialed up my wife, to call her, to tell her I love her and to say goodbye. And I didn't push send though to call her, because we just kept floating. And, you know, for those of you who know about planes, these small planes, they have a glide, they can keep gliding for quite a ways. So after, you know, he's cranking the engine, nothing's happening. And I just remember, I'll always remember this sound in his voice. He had this kind of crack in his voice, and he said, "Oh my gosh." It was like when it sat into him that, like, this is happening. This plane is not going to restart. We're going down. And that's the kind of the first point time that I spoke up and I said, Jackson, this is what you trained for. What is the next step? And that was kind of the language we used with each other when we're out training. It's like, hey, this is like, let's stay in this mentally. I said, what's the next step? And he kind of got to work and mayday, mayday, you know, 7-9 or 4-4-6. I'll never forget that. 7-9 or 4-4-6 was the name of, you know, the name of his plane. It's like emergency landing. He looks on his instruments. He starts doing some math. He looks into the distance. He sees the interstate in Park City, and he says, I can make it. I can make it to the highway. We were going, we were gliding there. It's like, okay. And I just sat back and let him do his thing. I mean, there's a couple of things that happened that just showed, like, the mental state that he was in to be able to make these maneuvers. But we ended up landing on the freeway on I-80 in Park City. It was a perfect landing. There was no injuries to us or any other vehicles. Nobody crashed. We landed, pulled over to the side, and it was wild. Every single law enforcement, emergency responder in the area was there. News, our wing was across the entire freeway, blocking the entire freeway until the cops got there, and we had to push it kind of down into the ditch. It was wild, and we landed, and we were just sitting there in shock. It's like, what just happened? And then some guy comes, pounds on the window, says, "Nice landing, dude."
Well, it was.
So that was wild. As soon as it happened, I was just in shock for a little bit. And I grew up, it's kind of a weird story. My wife comes and picks us up, or we get picked up. We go home. I hug my wife, and we're just kind of trying to digest, what happened here, because I didn't get hurt, I didn't die, obviously, but I still got to this point mentally where I accepted it. I accepted death. And so it was almost just not a disappointment, but that I wasn't dead, but almost just like, there's not really words to explain that emotion, because it wasn't fear. It wasn't terror. It was just like, hey, I was supposed to die and now I'm alive. So now what?
Yeah. What's next? Where do I go?
Yeah. That night I'm laying in bed and I'm just replaying it over and over. I can't sleep. I grew up Mormon, and in the Mormon faith, you just, you don't drink alcohol. It's one of the big, big no-nos. And I never had. And so this was, I'm 30 years old. I've never sipped alcohol. And I remember earlier that day, my wife's, mom was in town. I think she had just left that day or maybe the day before, and she likes to cook with wine. And I remember seeing this bottle of wine on the counter, and I don't know what, what emotion it was, what got into me, but I just like, I sat up in bed, I walked downstairs, and I chugged the entire bottle of wine that was left. And it was disgusting. It was this room temperature. I'd never had wine, and it was a red wine, and it's kind of acquired taste. And I kind of like gagged a little bit, rinsed my mouth out, went back. And then I don't remember feeling, hungover or drunk or anything, but I remember falling asleep. That's for sure. But it was, just a weird place to be. There's just like, I kind of had this like, I don't care attitude, and also this like gratitude, but also just, it was very, very confusing. And it took me a few months to kind of digest that. I went and saw a therapist, and he explained to me that he's like, "You're going through a midlife crisis right now." I'm like, what do you mean? I'm 30 years old.
Like, I just did the math. What?
What do you mean? He's like, a midlife crisis doesn't have to do with your age. What triggers a midlife crisis is typically that people have an experience with death. Maybe it's a death of a parent or a friend, and you have this realization that you're not invincible, that this life does have an end to it, and it sort of just becomes very, very real. That really resonated with me, that life became very real. That we're here, and it's not going to be forever. Not to be cliche about, the new lease on life and life flash before my eyes type of thing. But in a way it's kind of real, because I just realized like, yeah, this is it. This is the time that we have. While I'm on this way down in a plane thinking I'm about to die, I'm not thinking about business or money or, all that things. I was thinking about telling my wife that I love her and holding my son. And to have that real of an experience at 30 years old versus, 70 or 80 or 90 on a deathbed, really changed things for me, changed my perspective. And then especially you take into consideration the religious background and in this ultra focus on this life after death, right? Going to heaven and this eternity with God. There really isn't an end point at life. Like, sure, it's sad, but you don't even consider it. And so to bring everything to a point, instead of these parallel lines of my eternity, to bring my life to a point that ends, you know, at this life, it made me start to question everything, and it made me change everything that I was doing, from a business, from the way that I approached my relationships, from the way that I understood, you know, that I spent my time, and also my relationship with my, you know, childhood religion, and with my belief in God or a deity. It changed everything. It sort of set me on the course, I'd say, for the next 4 years, you know, 4 or 5 years, where I'm at now.
And I was going to ask you, and listen, I agree with you. I just don't believe that once we're dead, we're dead. I think that we are energy creatures, and we're going to go somewhere. I don't know where, but I don't think we just disappear. I just don't. I can't even buy into that. Some people do, some people don't. I don't. So, but you're sharing that it shaped your perspective on leadership and in your business. Was there any particular things that you put into place internally and externally in business that kind of changed your trajectory?
Not that necessarily perfectly translated from this plane experience, but more just, instead of focusing so much just on the making the money and being profitable and growing the business, it just shifted the focus on who am I as a person, and what really is important in life. And I think that greatly shaped the way that I lead the company and the mission of the company and the culture that it creates. When we really are saying that relationships are what drive us and what are important to us, that we want our employees' best to be at home with their families. We don't want their best. We want their best to be at home, and we want them to be able to spend the time that they want with the people that they want, and to just enjoy, you know, enjoy these beautiful life experiences, and let Silicon Signs, the company, be a vehicle for that, rather than the other way around, which is what happens sometimes. And I think a lot of maybe personal journeys or company journeys. And with that comes, yeah, a really beautiful culture of freedom, you know, of commitment, of wanting to do well in a short amount of time here, so that you can just free up the time and the resources, with relationships. So, yeah, it translates, but it was more from an ideological standpoint rather than like here's a to-do item I'm going to do, or an objective, because, you know, X, Y, and Z happened, you know, on this plane.
Well, that makes sense. So, and I'm trying to kind of picture how your employees, when you walked in, they, oh, you're here, you're alive, good. What do we do now? What was their response to you, the updated 2.0 Chase?
You know, it's not something that happened overnight. You know, I was still navigating it and figuring out what was going on. In fact, I'd say that it's not like I walked into work on Monday and was just like, you know, let's go, guys. Like, I actually almost left the company.
Really?
So one of the customers that we do work for is Crumble Cookies. So we work with franchises. And one of the companies we work with is Crumble Cookies. And during that time, they were going through some pretty massive growth and showing some pretty good profits and everything. And so here I am with this, you know, midlife crisis type thing, where I'm questioning everything and seeing the world in a different light. And then I'm going through a faith crisis at the same time, where, you know, growing up in a very high demand religion, my family is just very religious. The Mormon Church is more than just a belief system. It really is its own culture. And I live in Utah, where, you know, the church was, you know, not founded, but it's where, you know, a lot of the Mormons live, right? It's where the headquarters are, I'll say.
When I think of Utah, I do think that. I just assume it's one and the same.
Yeah,
probably
yeah.
Incorrectly, but that's how I identify Utah.
No, you're not too far off. I wouldn't say, I don't know if it's the majority of the population anymore, because just things are shifting. But yeah, this is where, you know, Brigham Young landed, and, you know, from journeying west, and it's where the BYU is. That's where we went to school. I went to college. So yeah, very big Mormon population, and you can't really get away from it. It permeates work and social life and school and community. There's not really a distinction between those things. It really kind of is. And so if you're not part of the church in Utah, there is a little bit of a, you know, other type thing. You're not on the inside, especially if you don't know the language, of all the different, yeah, it really is just its own culture. And so I'm going through this moment where I'm just questioning all of that, and whether I believe in the truth claims of the Mormon Church, and also if I believe in God at all. And I wanted to run away. I wanted to have some time by myself where I wasn't surrounded by anybody I knew to just process this. And, you know, luckily, you know, for me, I guess my wife was feeling some similar things. It was hard for me, but it was also hard for her. She had to process that same thing and say, like, what if you did die? You know, what would my life be like? Like, it was a strange time for both of us. And we were both just like, yeah, let's get out of here. You know, and we could just go away. We can figure our stuff out, have some time. And so we were about to open a few crumble cookie stores out in Maryland. And so we went out there a couple times. We negotiated leases. We looked for apartments to rent. We were really close. And when it got down to signing the contract with Crumble, we just didn't feel right about it. Just, I don't know, call it a gut feel type thing. And we decided not to move forward with that. But we also, I think we realized that we were calling it a business opportunity. But I think we knew kind of deep down that we were running away, rather than facing this faith transition and, you know, this faith crisis, like, head on. And just being honest about it and letting the people and our loved ones around us know about it and being authentic and honest about that experience and that sit in the situation. But you know, that was like a year long process. And the people at work, like my business partner, you know, and I told him, I said, hey, I'm going to move out to Maryland. I'm going to open Crumbles. He's like, okay. Like,
shoot.
Don't know what to do with that. I was like, I'll still be able to do things from there, blah, blah, blah. Like, you know, and bless him for being just so patient, you know, with me. Cause I told him the situation, you know, what I was going through, and, you know, any other person probably have been like, heck you are, like that, you know, but he was just very, very understanding. He's like, okay, that's what you need to do, and we'll figure it out. I think he's glad that I came around, along with a lot of our employees are glad that I came around and stayed. And, but yeah, it wasn't for a while after that, you know, maybe a year even, to where I kind of understood myself, and had maybe more compassion on myself and the situation, and understood what was going on and was able to cope with it in a way to move it into action items and say, okay, here's what we're going to do. So you asked, yeah, did they just like, oh, wow, Chase, you just have a glow. You walked in and you just, like, you know, met death. Like, no, I was in the dumps for a long time, and trying to, I was very confused for a long time.
You know what you're describing, Chase? I've lost a lot of family members and my pets. I just lost a 19-year-old cat the other day, which just broke my heart. But it sounds to me like, whether you recognized it or not, you were dealing with grief brain. Are you familiar with that term?
No.
When you've lost somebody, a spouse, or, you know, somebody that you loved very, very dearly, particularly a spouse, you go through just grief brain. You're not making sense. You're digging through everything. What if? What happened? I should have been better. You're beating yourself up. You're mad at God. You're just grief brain. This is not a good to anybody listening. I've been there. I've done it. Don't make any decisions right now. Just don't.
That is a wise counsel. And, you know, I didn't lose anybody physically.
But you lost a lot in your heart.
Yeah. I think I may have been grieving the person that I was.
There you go. That's what I'm hearing.
Yeah.
So it's, but you came out of it and your wife obviously was not looking at you like, what are you talking about? We're staying here. I mean, you had a lot of support. And, you know, when she asked you what would have happened to me, I can tell her what would have happened. Her life would have been irrevocably changed forevermore. So fortunately, that didn't happen. But it sounds like you went through the grief stages. You're bargaining with God. You're mad at God. You're just saying, okay, how do I be better? There's so many different stages. And here you are. So whatever you did, it worked.
Yeah, I'm really happy, you know, that I'm really glad that I came out on the other side, and I'm really happy about where my life is right now. Like to have that experience. Yeah, it was very difficult and it was confusing, but it gave me so much more clarity of who I am and kind of what I feel like my purpose can be and the difference that I can make and my realm of influence can be and where to put my time and more than that, just my thought process on things, just being so much more open-minded about the world and about life and about people and different ideologies and belief systems and, you know, lifestyles, you name it. It was a harrowing experience, but all growth, you know, comes through turmoil. You know, whether it's, you know, growing up, you know, being an athlete, I did not like track practice. That was not the fun part. Puking on the side of a track and sitting in ice baths and rolling out sore muscles. That was not the fun part. That was painful. But that's how you grow. You gotta break things down and rebuild. And that's kind of what I did from, you know, my whole life perspective rather than just from a muscle.
And you and I talked during the pre-interview a month or two ago now, I think, about mindfulness. And what you're sharing with us now is that you really have learned to delve into mindfulness. Stop and think. What is this going to do? Is this going to work? Mindfulness. Pay attention to the people around you. Listen to the people around you. Sometimes you have to discount 80% of what they say. But you still have to be very mindful about putting your step here, step there. How has that changed for you?
Yeah, it's an interesting topic, and it has been at the forefront of my mind even just today and this week is how important it is to be to just kind of take some time and analyze what's happening and see, you know, rather than just being you know, a victim of circumstance or reactionary to whatever's happening. Like you said, being mindful of what's going on. You mentioned this in the intro. I recently have received an ADHD diagnosis, and I know it's highly overdiagnosed. I'm not on any medication or anything. I'm not at a point where I feel like, you know, I need medication, but what it has done for me, in fact, when the therapist first brought it up, I rejected it, said, nope, that's not me. You got it all wrong. That's a, you know, a disability in a way, right? It's a mental hindrance. I don't want medication. I don't want anything. I don't want a crutch. Cause I want to have control over my life and my results. And he's like, hey, I'm not pushing anything on you. I just want to tell you that, you know, these are some of the symptoms. You exhibit a lot of those same, you know, mindsets and symptoms and it's okay. So we can talk about it more. And I've sort of opened up to the idea and I realized that I'm not letting it be a crutch for me. I'm kind of figuring out how it could be a superpower, but even more importantly, it has given me a bucket to put things in of some certain emotions that I'm having, and saying, okay, why am I feeling this way? And being mindful about that. Is there actually something going on here? Or could it be the ADHD talking, right? Do I really have to make this impulsive decision because I really feel like it's the right thing? Or can I sit back and say, maybe that is my ADHD talking. Do I have to dive like 100% in and hyper focus on this new diet fad or this new exercise thing, you know, or maybe it's just a hype of dopamine that I got recently and I could hold on to that for a second so I don't end up disappointing myself and feeling shame later when I quit it. But being taking the time, yeah, to slow down, and to think about, to think about the emotions, the implications, has been an absolute game changer for me.
I would think, and I guess I don't know much about ADHD, to be honest. In fact, I know very little about it. I may be, for all I know, but I don't want to know. So there you go. But in your opinion, ADHD, and we've talked about this, can be perceived as both a superpower, which is where you're leaning, and a weakness in leadership. So how do you navigate this duality? How is it working for you?
So just a I guess maybe some a brief little background. From what I understand about ADHD, there's it's a deficiency in dopamine, where you know, your brain needs kind of dopamine to focus and to kind of function, at least some sort of it. And so a lot of times with people with ADHD, they'll either, you know, procrastinate or avoid tasks.
Okay, now you just diagnosed me. God darn it.
Well, here's the kicker. But
Aww.
Once someone with ADHD gets into a topic or into a task, you can't stop them either. Like
nope.
they can get more done than anybody else and be more productive because they go into this hyper-focus mode. Does that sound
okay?
Weird?
Yeah. Okay.
Welcome to the club, Denise.
I'm gonna go cry. You just described me. Once I focus, don't talk to me. Get out of the way. I'm working.
I brought a Lego set home for my son the other day, and he's four, and there were small Legos. He couldn't really do it or read the instructions, so he wanted me to build it for him so he could play with it. And I sat down and I did it for him, and I thought it took me about 45 minutes. And my wife walked through the door. She coaches track. She came home, you know, about 7:30, and she's like, "Why is Ronnie, our 18-month-old, like, why is Ronnie still awake?" And I was like, "What are you?" It's 7:30. I'd been working on it for 2.5 hours and I had no clue because I was just so obsessed with just getting it done now that I was into it. So it is a cool superpower. You know, you get to, as long as you know how to use it. I mean, and you can.
Yeah. I mean, I've always assumed that my focus is a superpower and nobody's going to tell me different. So let's just get that out of the way. But I had no idea.
Yeah. So you know, the ways that it can be a weakness and get you in trouble is sometimes you get this dopamine rush, and so people with ADHD usually have this mentality of all or nothing, right? Like, why do something at all unless am I hurting your feelings?
I don't want to talk to you anymore. Keep going. I'll suck it up.
All right. I'll send you the bill for my therapy
yeah.
session after this.
Yeah.
Don't worry.
Okay.
So yeah, there's this all or nothing mentality. Why do it if you're not going to be the best? Why do it if you're not going to focus 100% of your attention and do it the right way or do it all the way? Like, and so that's why you get a lot of, you know, unfinished projects with people with ADHD. I'm going to start a home project and not finish it, or I'm going to leave a lot of loose ends, or I'm going to start the diet and not finish it. Or the exercise program and just, I'm going to go buy all the new outfits and new running shoes and I'm going to do this. And then 3 days later, like, nah, never mind, next. And so associated with that level of kind of, all or nothing, full send attitude, for me at least, is accompanied by a lot of shame, and like self-loathing, to where it's like, I'm a quitter. Like there, and I've had this conversation with my wife a lot of times, like just telling her, like, I think I'm a quitter. Like, I can't stick with anything, unless I have someone, I don't know, holding my hand through it, which wasn't really consistent. It's like, okay, well, I stuck with sports. And like, here I am running a business that I've worked, you know, done for 6 years now. Like, I stuck with that. And it was just really confusing. And so that's why I said, having this ADHD kind of gave me a bucket to have a little bit more compassion on myself. to say, no, it's not that I'm a quitter. It's that I quit things that I'm not interested in. And so I just need to be more careful about the things that I jump into. You know, when I, we're going to have a baby in August and I'm going to take a month off from work and I'm going to hyper focus on being a dad and being present and being there to help my wife and be with the kids and to bond with this new child. That is a superpower to be able to turn that level of focus on. And when it's time to grow a business and when it's time to sprint and hit that next benchmark, I can turn on that superpower there and hit that. And then, you know, and then turn it back off. So that's why, how I'm trying to, you know, navigate this and learn more about myself and learn how to use it. I'm still not good at it. You know, I'm really cautious about what I get myself into. Like I won't start a show on Netflix. Like I just can't, because if I do, I won't go to work for 2 weeks until I finish the entire series, and I'll stay up all night and all day. And I won't be able to, I can't just watch an episode a week. It doesn't make sense to me. It doesn't compute in my brain. I have to do it all. I have to finish the project once I start.
Okay, we're twins.
There's probably some other people resonating with this too.
I do the same thing. If I'm going to start, like, I don't watch TV. I very rarely watch TV. In fact, I picked up my remote some time ago and had to retrain myself how to turn it back on. It's a Fire Stick. I couldn't remember. But I wanted to watch a Discovery of Witches. So I had to buy the DVD set and just binge for a solid weekend, get it out of the way, and then put it back in the cupboard. It's ridiculous.
Well, welcome to the club, Denise. You're a superhuman too. You're an
See,
X-Men.
Now we're friends again. Okay. So but I do the same things. You know, focus is important to me. And does this happen with you? When I don't feel like I'm focusing properly and I have criteria, I have to sit down and have a talk with myself. It's annoying because I'm kind of bitchy. So I get mean.
To be a fly on the wall to hear one of those conversations, Denise, that would be a hoot.
I'm just glad my cats can't talk. Seriously. They hear it all. So, Chase, I'm going to ask this, and I'm not even sure if there's any particular thing that you were mentioning when we did our pre-interview, but when it comes to high-level decision-making, was there a time when you made a significant mistake, and what did you learn from it?
Being a business owner, I guess running any organization, decision-making is the difference maker, right? How quickly and how well can you make decisions? Because the worst thing you do is just not do anything, not act, or just be in paralysis. And so that's what I look for in leaders in my organization, is how good are you at making decisions? In fact, I hired a manager who had no experience in sales. And the reason why is because she is a quick decision maker, and she's willing to accept the responsibility for the backlash if the decision is wrong, and not have this immense fear of failure. And so it seems like kind of my whole job is just to make decisions. And so the difference between good decision makers and bad decision makers, in my opinion, is how well can you, glean information? How well can you gather data? I believe that, you know, most people have good judgment. You know, if you're an adult, like, you have, I think, you know, people have bad judgment, you know, quote unquote, bad judgment. I think it's just, you're bad at getting the right data to make the right decision. And so the bigger we get, as a company, the bigger the decisions, the bigger the consequences, good or bad, are, and the more expensive, you know, those consequences are. Last year, earlier in the year, we came off a really strong 2022 year. Crumble had opened like 500 locations, and we were working like dogs, and we had a good chunk of money in the bank, and I felt like I was the smartest person in the world, you know. Like, gosh, we're just cooking with peanut oil here. And so Okay, how do we want to, what's the next step for us? How do we want to grow, right? What's next? We, you know, trying to be innovative, trying to keep things going, wanting more. And I decided, let's get into franchising. Like, let's franchise our business. We work with franchises. Why can't we franchise?
That was going to be my next question. Keep going.
So I decided to open another location, another Silicon Signs location. We opened it in California, which in and of itself is probably a mistake to open any business in California. That's beside the point. So I made this decision like in February, and we had the like end of February, we had the store open in May, like built out, employees hired, equipment purchased on site, everything in just a couple of months. A few months into it, I realized, crap.
It's California. What were you thinking?
I don't know if I would have done it very well anywhere. The reason why is because everything was good. Like, the business was successful in Utah, and we're thinking, hey, we did it here. That was easy. Let's do it again. Not remembering the sleepless nights and the grind that my partner and I were doing in the first year of the company, and had the skin in the game, and we were, you know, just relentless to succeed. And we had our backs against the wall too. We didn't have anything else. Like, that was how we paid our rent and bought food and supported our families. And it just wasn't the same thing that we had, that the employees working there, in California. And, it was very expensive. And then in 2023, the market kind of softened, right? The interest rates continued to rise and business started to stall. Everyone was thinking, oh, is this pending recession? When's it going to come? And so our business in Utah was heading downhill and quickly. And I just had spent, you know, a couple $100,000 opening this store in California that wasn't making any money, that I didn't know if I had the right team there to build it. And I just started questioning everything, you know, like my ability to make decisions. Like, I'm now the dumbest person in the world.
It's that focus thing, I'm telling you.
Right. And I remember I'm eating lunch with my father-in-law, who's been just a mentor of mine in business since since I married his daughter 10 years ago. You know, he's known me since before I was, well, since I was driving, you know, a truck for UPS, and while I was running track, like we've been in each other's lives for a while. And I was telling him, just like, man, I don't even know how to make good decisions. I don't think like this is a big fumble. And I remember he said, hey, you're moving, you're acting, and you're a gunslinger, and gunslingers are going to catch a bullet every once in a while. And that really resonated with me. And it helped me really like have again more compassion on myself. Like, yeah, you know what? I'm trying things, but it also, through the whole experience, it's not like I just justified it. I said, oh yeah, well, I'm just trying things. At least I'm moving while all you bums are sitting down doing nothing. No, I just said, yeah, I am. And that's important that I am moving, but I can be more responsible with the decision making. I can take some more time to gather more information, and to just be, to use the judgment that I have, you know, a little bit more, you know, a little more wisely. And so that was a really great learning experience for me. And also just, it brought me into the next kind of level, I think, of leadership and of business, that my decisions don't just affect me. I have people who are counting on me to make good decisions, who are counting on their, you know, their families, you know, feeding their families based off of the decisions that I'm making. And that's a big responsibility. It's an important responsibility, and it's not one that I take lightly. It was a growing experience. We've since cut ties with that store and got back on track to what our true business model is, which is not being a franchise, but just working with franchises. But also what kind of keeps me going there is the grace that I have for that process, that one, yeah, we do have to always be moving forward. We have to be acting. But at the same time, I can look at that experience and say that that experience opening that store and losing a couple hundred thousand dollars led me to where we're at right now with our current business model, with our current focus and laser focus that we're on in this market. We couldn't have gotten there without having that slight detour to sort of, check that box in a way. It's okay. It's not that, it's definitely this. This is what we're doing. And we've had explosive growth since then. And so part of the decision making is, yeah, being willing to take responsibility when the decision was bad, not being afraid to fail, but also looking for the good in the failure. Like I call it tuition, right? If I that was $200,000 in tuition that I paid, and it is already having a return on that capital investment I made in this California location.
And, you know, I was taking down notes while you were talking about the conversation with your father-in-law. I love Gunslinger. I wrote that down and underlined it. But my thought process, and this is what I wrote down, Chase is employing thoughtful logic. Does that make sense to you?
Yeah. Expand on that.
Well, I was listening to you, you know, taking in what your father-in-law said, and wincing a bit at the gunslinger part, because I winced with you. It's like, ooh, that smarted. But then you immediately took it to yourself and said, okay, but now I can do this. You didn't just go, oh, that's baloney. That's not what happened. You immediately processed it and pivoted. It was thoughtful logic.
Yeah. Yeah, at the beginning, you brought up one of our core values is grow or die. And we have our written definition of what grow or die means to us. And there's two sentences. One, we're obsessed with growth and progression. And number two, we're perfectly honest with ourselves. And coming from an athletic background, that's where I learned that concept, that you cannot grow without honesty. And the analogy I give to my employees is that if you go to the mall, right, and you look at the map and you're trying to get to whatever, JCPenney's, you know, may it rest in peace.
I thought they were gone. I don't go to malls.
Call it the food court. Yeah. So you're trying to get to the food court. What do? You go to that big mall at the beginning and you find where the food court is. Okay, there it is on the map. You can't just start walking, because until you know where your position is on that map, you can't navigate the path to get there. And that's where the perfect honesty comes when you're trying to grow. Number one, identify where you want to be. And then number two, identify with where you are at that given moment. So that you know where the next step is. If you're dishonest with yourself, if you're saying you're better than you are, or that you're further along than you are, then you're still lost. You might know where you're going, but you don't know where you are. So you can't get there. And so that level of humility and honesty, say, yeah, you know what? I can make good decisions, but this was not a good one. I messed up. I moved a little bit too fast. I need to be more careful with the money of the business, with the decisions that I'm making, with the people that count on me. I have to do better next time. And so I can be more mindful about, you know, when big decisions, big expensive decisions come up, I need to take more than just my ego into consideration and my thoughts of what it is. I need to take consideration the risk factor of what am I putting on the line? And do I have people who are backing me? And have I taken everything into consideration? Have I talked to the right mentors and bounced us off enough people? That was a good point time for me to just be honest with myself and say, you know what? Yeah, I'm not where I need to be right now. And it's helped me be a bit better leader and a better decision maker.
And see, I think that's an amazing story, and you have a terrific father-in-law. And I wanted to back up just a little bit, because you are now, your company is what, 6 years old?
Yeah, we just crossed 6 years.
Yeah. But you are now a national sign company with your work showcased in all 50 states. Congratulations.
Thank you.
How did that happen? What'd you do?
So working with franchises, it sort of naturally gets us around the whole country. We've actually even been in Puerto Rico and Canada as well.
Nice.
But it usually takes sign companies, you know, decades to break into the national space. takes a lot of experience, a lot of capital investment, and because nobody's going to, no big national franchise or national company is going to walk into some startup sign company and say, hey, do you want to handle the signage for my entire system? Funnily enough, that is what happened to us. We somehow got this huge deal with a publicly traded company. They're opening 50 vet clinics. We were in business 3 months. We got this PO for $700,000 to open 50 vet, do signage for 50 vet clinics across the country in 3 months. They're opening 50 in 3 months. And we end up getting a loan just so we can buy the materials. We flew around the country and we learned all about permitting and shipping logistics and finding local installers and how all that works. And so within that first, 6 months of business, we had already, done 50 locations across the country, which opened the doors for us to use that chip to go to other franchises and say, hey, can we be your national company? Like, oh, well, can you handle our business? Well, we just did 50 locations in 3 months. Are you opening faster than that? Well, no. All right, we'll give you a shot. And we just kind of climbed our way up from there. We still built the local aspect of our business over the last, 5 years, but it's just actually been in the last 12 months where we've gone all in with franchising, right? Because we had that experience. We opened the location in Fresno to see, do we want to franchise? Is that the business model we're after? And after saying, nope, but we do want to go all in with franchises and not do, not at a local sign company. That laser focus has been amazing to just find this market that we know where they are. We know how to market to them. And so we're just every day we're getting more and more opportunities working with new brands. We're becoming kind of a premier provider for franchises. So that's the long story of how we got into it. Yeah.
It's an amazing story, but you had so many things going on during this, but somehow you still never really, I mean, I know you had a tough time there after the plane crash, but you never really lost your focus on what the company was, who it served, and who your people are that are working with you, working for you, that you're working for. So I think those are probably some of your biggest achievements.
You know, I really care about the people that we work with. I grew up in a very conservative home, Christian and I would say, unfortunately, maybe a little close-minded to certain other lifestyles. In college, I was an athlete and I didn't get into the business school at BYU and I had to stay on track to graduate. And so I got thrown into the sociology program, which is like, whatever, here's just like, this garbage degree, whatever, I'll just get out and go get a job or do whatever. But studying sociology in college, changed. It was another life-changing experience for me to open my eyes and my heart to different lifestyles and to different people and to have love and compassion for people who didn't look like me or act like me or have the same, mindset or ideologies as me. And that's been so helpful for me in business. In fact, if anyone were to ask me, what education path should I take if I want to be a business owner or a leader or an entrepreneur, I would recommend sociology. Forget about business courses. You can learn all that on the job. You can learn how to read a spreadsheet. Go look it up on YouTube. But to learn how to understand people and to love people and have compassion for people and to lead people, that is what business ownership is. To lead people and to motivate people and to know what makes them tick. And it's been very, very rewarding to have the focus be on the relationship of the people versus the profits of the company, because the one takes care of the other.
It does. And, I'm of the firm belief that there really are no accidents. Things happen when they need to happen, and then you deal with them. I could be wrong, but that's just the way I think.
Whatever it is, whether it is an accident or not, whatever you believe, even if it is an accident, like, we could still make the most out of what it is. Whatever situations come our way, take it, learn from it, glean what you can from it. Otherwise, it's just wasted time or wasted money. You might as well call it tuition and learn from it.
I love that. That just went up on my whiteboard, tuition. Chase, it has been a fantastic conversation with you, and I sincerely appreciate you taking the time to spend with me in the audience. So Would you mind, before I reluctantly let you go, would you mind sharing your online presence and your preferred means of contact with our audience so people can learn more about you?
Yeah, sure. Our website, silkensigns.com. That's the company we run. You can find me on LinkedIn, Chase Dalton, on LinkedIn or Instagram. Actually, I deleted Instagram. I was wasting too much time, hashtag ADHD. but yeah, if you reach out on our website or LinkedIn, I'd love to connect with you there. If you feel like a relationship would be worthwhile to just be connected. So I appreciate you inviting me on, Denise. It was wonderful talking to you and sharing my story. And I really appreciate it.
Thank you. And listen, before I let you go, again, very reluctantly, because this has been a fascinating conversation. Now I have to go look up ADHD. Thank you for that. But, yeah, don't send me a bill. I'll send you mine. But are there any last thoughts that you'd like to share with our audience?
No, I feel like we really covered it. A lot of those things there. If I could, share, kind of sum all of this up is, like I started, nobody really knows what they're doing. If you're feeling like, oh man, I need to get my crap together, or I need to figure out my business or my life, and one day I will. No, you won't. You'll never get there. You'll never figure it out. The joy is in the process. And in the journey to get there. And we're all, no matter how successful we seem or how happy we seem, we're all fumbling our way through life. And we're trying to just do our best with the resources and the information that we have. And so have compassion on yourself, give yourself patience, and do the same for other people around you. And that's where I believe like that true success comes from me is in the success of the relationships that I have with myself and with the people around me. And if you're interested in business, that's the building blocks of business, is the relationship with yourself and with other people.
And listen, I agree with you. I have this invisible, well, I have two invisible signs that float over my head. I'm a cat woman, apparently. I'm not the crazy cat lady yet, but it could happen. So there is an invisible sign that floats around me, no matter where I am, that says schmuck lives here, because a kitten or a puppy will find me. The other one is, and I can see this one because I think it's on my forehead, that says work in progress. So I try not to beat myself up too badly, because I am a work in progress. We all are.
Yeah.
That's anyway, beautiful. Thank you, Chase. I really enjoyed having you on the show. And to our audience, as we conclude today's episode, your feedback means a lot to me. So if you found the show helpful, please support us with a quick review on iTunes. And this is why: your input is vital in my mission to inspire and empower more individuals with these terrific interviews. So don't forget to hit subscribe, leave a review, and share your Partner in Success Radio with friends and colleagues. And be sure to go find Chase Dalton on the web and connect with him. And thank you for tuning in. And I will see you next week. Chase, again, thank you so much.
Thank you.
Get your voice heard. If you would like to launch your own far-reaching podcast, contact Denise Griffiths at yourofficeontheweb.com and go to the podcast tab.